Morning.
Okay, well, good morning, everybody. The City Council will come to order. Sue, please call the roll.
Fish.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard Adams.
Okay, we're going to begin with a, we have two proclamations this morning. And the first one is proclamation for the farmers markets in Portland. And we have, I believe, Trudy Tolliver, who was going to say a few words. Did any of your other marketeers wish to come up?
Sure.
Yeah, why don't you come up here? I'll read the resolution, and then we can turn it over to you for a few words, and I'll give you the proclamation, I should say. And the proclamation is, whereas Portland Farmers Market first grazed the Portland landscape 20 seasons ago in 1992, and whereas farmers markets have since sprouted in multiple neighborhoods throughout Portland to serve hundreds of thousands of shoppers and generate millions of dollars for the local economy, and whereas farmers markets contribute to the health of Portland residents by providing access to high-quality, nutritious, locally grown food, and whereas farmers markets help foster economically, ecologically, and socially sustainable communities, and whereas farmers markets help to ensure that farming and food production remain viable professions in the state of Oregon, and whereas farmers markets provide a connection to the agricultural bounty of our region as they nourish and inspire community, now therefore I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim June 2011 to be Farmers Market Month in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this month. Yes. As a frequent customer of the Hillsdale Farmers Market, as well as the South Park Blocks Farmers Market and others as they begin, I'm really happy to read that proclamation. And now we'll turn it over to Trudy Tolliver, the Executive Director of the Portland Farmers Market.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Fritz. It's great to be here. As Dan said, I am Trudy Tolliver. I'm the Executive Director at Portland Farmers Market. We operate six markets in Portland, including our flagship market in the City of Portland Park Block, surrounded by Portland State on Saturdays. It's the flagship market as well as a pretty major community gathering place. If you haven't been to visit lately, there's been a lot going on. It's been quite lively. Since 1992, we have been bringing fresh local foods, produce, meats, and cheeses to the residents of Portland. And we're going to continue doing that. Today, I'm very honored to be assigned a special month. And I accept that honor on behalf of our thousands of shoppers who I'm sure really appreciate it too. So since we're celebrating our 20th years, I just wanted to mention a couple of important milestones. First, an interesting little tidbit is that 22 of our original vendors from 1992 are still with us. They're still selling at our markets. That's pretty amazing, I thought, when I learned that fact. Our markets are also showing consistent growth. In 2010, we sprinkled nearly $8 million into the local food economy, and we're already showing growth in this year so far, and it's only been a couple of months. I don't think that our community has met its threshold for farmers markets quite yet either. Interstate neighborhood and Woodstock neighborhoods are each sprouting new markets this year, and although those are not run by Portland Farmers Market, we're still delighted with their success and their growth. So I look forward to celebrating Farmers Market Month as the years go by and continuing to contribute to Portland's lively food economy. Thanks very much for the
honor. Thanks, Trudy.
And may I just say one thing?
Sure.
Mr. President, Trudy, I just want to say on behalf of Portland Parks and Rec that we greatly value the partnership with Portland Farmers Market. We have the honor of being, I guess, technically the landlord in a number of locations.
Yeah.
And I think you're very modest. Because I believe you were rated the number one farmers market in the country in one of the surveys.
A couple of years ago.
And so we're particularly appreciative of how you impact the local economy, the healthy fresh food that you supply, and the fact that you're giving greater access to low-income shoppers.
Thank you. So
thank you to you and the farmers markets and our friends from Montevilla and Hillsdale that do so much to enhance the quality of life in our community.
And I just wanted to also thank you and recognize Eamon Malloy, who runs the Hillsdale Farmers Market, which, as I said, is my closest farmers market, but not my exclusive, but my closest one. So I have the proclamation here. I don't know. Did you want to get a picture?
Okay.
Can we get a picture? Proclamation in honor of Great Blue Heron Week.
So I'm going to invite Bob Salinger, Mike Houck, and Emily Roth to come forward.
Wow.
Emily, we need some balance up here, please. And of course,
some supervision of Mike.
This is one of our favorite events, and not just because Mike does his imitation of a blue heron at some point during the presentation. I'll follow Dan's lead and read the proclamation first, and then turn it over to our good friend Mike Hout. Whereas the great blue heron is a majestic symbol of the city of Portland's efforts to restore, protect, and sustain ecologically healthy habitats for fish and wildlife and for the enjoyment of citizens, and whereas Great Blue Heron Week represents an opportunity to restore our commitment to our natural environment by celebrating our past successes and future challenges, and whereas the city of Portland continues to distinguish itself as one of the country's leaders in using green infrastructure by better integrating the built and natural environments and addressing global climate change in its climate action plan, and whereas the city of Portland recognizes its collaboration with its regional partners, the value of the intertwine, a world-class system of parks, trails, and natural areas in the Portland region, and the efforts of the Intertwine Alliance to realize that vision. And whereas the City of Portland continues to work with partners from the Intertwine Alliance, including the Audubon Society of Portland, Urban Green Spaces Institute, to restore habitat at Oaks Bottom, Ross Island, and other natural areas within the city, therefore I, Sam Adams, on behalf of Portland City Council, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim June 1st through June 5th, 2011, to be the 25th annual Great Blue Heron Week in the City of Portland, and encourage all residents to observe it. Congratulations.
I think Bob's going to lead off.
Well, good morning, and thank you for the proclamation. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Portland Audubon Society. Excuse me, my voice is going this morning, so I'll be brief. You know, we live in an amazing place for birds, an amazing place where people can interact with birds, experience nature in the middle of downtown Portland. And right now, I don't know if you've seen them, but Western tanagers are moving through, which are beautiful, colorful little bird. A lot of people, when they see them, think they're escaped domestic parrots or pets. But they move through in these flocks. And
what are they called again, Bob?
Western tanagers.
What color are they?
They're yellow and orange and red. They're just very spectacular, colorful birds. And then they come through in these big flocks, and so they suddenly show up in people's neighborhoods, and they're astounded. And they're one of 209 species that actually pass through Portland every year in some part of their life cycle that follow the riverways. And so we are in this amazingly diverse bird place, and we've had some huge successes over the last year for birds as well that I just want to highlight. The establishment of the no-wake zone in Ross Island that this council played such a big role in. Airport Futures, which is going to lead to restoration of grasslands out on Government Island for some of our most seriously declining species. And also restoration in the neighborhoods as well, an important equity component, you know, keeping people close to nature. The Riverview Cemetery acquisition, a huge step forward in our system of natural areas. We also have challenges coming forward. We may be looking at the listing of the streaked-horned lark, a bird that for various reasons likes to use undeveloped industrial sites. And one of the last strongholds is out around.
Did you breed that bird?
Oh,
but that may be listed within the next 2 years. So we may have a terrestrial species as well as the salmon and steelhead coming down the line. And it's very important to be proactive. And we already have a case in point. The Port of Portland has been proactive. The airport futures plan, the work they've been doing on the landfill, they're getting ahead of the curve, and they deserve a lot of credit for that. We need to stay ahead of that curve, though. We don't want to wind up in a situation like the salmon and steelhead. We have an opportunity here. We also have some interesting places where we can be really on the cutting edge. Those western tanagers I mentioned that are coming through that people are calling us about, they're calling us because they're curious about them. They're also calling us because they're hitting windows. We had a couple of big strikes in recent days, and birds are attracted to windows. They don't see them as solid objects. They see them as open space, and they often fly into them. And in fact, it's the number two cause of bird declines in the United States is window strikes after habitat destruction. And we've been working with the city on a proposal to bring forward a lights out ordinance that would restrict nighttime lighting and also bird safe building guidelines. And we have an example of that at University of Portland that's going to be incorporated in to the construction on the bluffs. Where we can stay ahead of the curve on that issue as well. And many cities across the United States, including Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, are adopting these kinds of voluntary but important approaches to protecting bird life. One thing I'd like to highlight for you, and I know Dean's behind me today, is I think one of the critical positions for moving the bird agendas forward in the city of Portland is one of the positions being cut at BES this year, and we're terribly concerned about that. That is the terrestrial wildlife position that's been working on the bird agenda and the terrestrial ecology strategy. It's been working on the river plan uplands. It's a critical position to think about as we want to stay ahead of the curve on things like streaked-horned larks and implement some of these great plans that we've developed over the last couple of years. So I would really encourage the city to look at that and make sure that if we're losing that position, that we are keeping some of those projects going forward. But today is mostly a day to celebrate our amazing biodiversity, our amazing bird life, and so thank you again for the proclamation.
And Bob, thank you for your service on the Parks Board.
Thank you.
Mike Houck.
Mike Houck, Urban Green Spaces Institute. As I was walking down Southwest Main here today, three women passed me, and just as they passed, they said, well, you don't see that every day, carrying a great blue heron under an umbrella. Was also reflecting on the fact that it's been literally a quarter of a century, 25 years ago, that I grabbed Bud Clark on the way out of the Hilton Hotel after he'd given a really inspiring talk to a group of natural resource managers from around the western U.S., suggested, given that he had mentioned great blue herons, because you all know that he loved to canoe so many times during his presentation, that we should have a city bird that was emblematic of the biodiversity that Bob referred to. And, of course, Bud said whoop, whoop, and literally 2 or 3 weeks later we had a proclamation. So it's been 25 years that I've had the pleasure of sitting before you to, you know, basically re-up our commitment to doing the sorts of programs that Bob just referred to. So I just want to thank you all for the work you do personally, but also the bureaus and all the programs that Bob just referred to. And in particular, the role the city of Portland has played in promoting the Intertwine, which is this bi-state Portland-Vancouver region of system of parks, trails, and natural areas. And it's really been Zeri Santner, who spent a lot of time with the local park providers, keeping this on the regional agenda. And thanks to you as well, Nick, for all the support you've given during various events that we've had with the Intertwine Alliance. So I just think it's critical that Portland continue to play that leadership role at the regional level to do all the things that we're discussing the city of Portland's doing here throughout the Portland-Vancouver metropolitan region. So,
you know, we're since you mentioned Mayor Clark, we're honoring him tomorrow at the opening of Bud Clark Commons.
Oh.
And which I hope you can come, but if you can't, I hope you will lend us the bird.
I will leave it with you.
You don't mind. I think it would add a lot to the event.
I will loan it to you.
Could you, Mike, tell us if someone wants to know what the activities are during the week, where do they go?
To the Audubon Society Portland website, audubonportland.org. And I particularly would like to point out we're doing our annual Ross Island Regatta from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. on Sunday, and we're launching from Willamette Park, so people just need to show up at Willamette Park. And some people have questioned, the river conditions. Actually, when the Columbia River is up, it backs up the Willamette, so Willamette is really basically a lake. The currents are not bad out there, so people should not be concerned about coming out and paddling around Ross Island with us and celebrating the no-wake zone in the lagoon and Holgate Channel.
Thanks for your work. Emily Roth is here. She's on the parks team, and one of her responsible areas of responsibility is Ross Island. Emily, would you like to add anything?
It's a great week, so thanks for the proclamation, and I want to thank Bob and Mike for all the great work that they have done for the city of Portland to preserve all our wetlands and streams that such important habitat to the great blue heron, and we continue to work with them cooperatively and doing a lot of restoration work on wetlands and streams, both on the Willamette and the Columbia area, and the Columbia Slough area, perfect habitat for great blue herons in our city.
That's fabulous. Can we get a picture here, Mr. President?
Sure. Well, thank you very much, both, all three of you.
I like how the hair is right in the middle. Okay, one more. It always takes a while for the second one. Sorry. Looks good.
Thank you.
It's 10 o'clock. And Dan, if I can also just acknowledge the work that Emily Hicks in my office, she helped pull together the proclamation. And Emily, thanks for your good work.
Okay, well, now we'll move to our regular agenda. And I guess we have a time certain. Sue, do you need to read
that?
We
do. Okay. Item 541, Combined Sewer Overflow Program.
This is our semi-annual update on our CSO, Combined Sewer Overflow Reduction Program. It's the largest public works project ever undertaken in the city, or by the city, I should say. It is a 20-year, $1.4 billion set of projects and programs to manage combined sewer overflows that used to occur every time it rained into the Willamette and to the Columbia Slough. This will be the second to the last report to the council because we're wrapping up construction on this project by December of this year. The Bureau has reported every 6 months since we began this construction nearly a decade ago. Hundreds of jobs have been created over the years, and hundreds of local firms have benefited. In fact, recently I was pleased to accept on behalf of the Bureau of Environmental Services the second award from the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs for this project. So here to present is Director Dean Marriott, Chief Engineer for CSO Projects Paul Gribben, and Amber Clayton from BES.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Commissioners. I am Dean Marriott, as the Commissioner said. We have a slideshow for you. We're going to move through it fairly rapidly. Many of you already know the background of how we got into this mess and what we've been doing for the last couple of decades to get out of it. The first slide is sort of timelines, moves left to right, starting in 1991, which is when the city signed its initial agreement with the state to begin the 20-year effort to control combined sewer overflows. And as the commissioner mentioned, we're in the final year, 2011, and progress has been made steadily along the way. This is the slide that shows that when we began in the early 1990s, we estimated that we discharged about 6 billion gallons of combined sewage into the Willamette and the Columbia Slough on an annual basis. We are now down way off to the right, lower right-hand corner, where you see 2011. The East Side Big Pipe Project is about to be commissioned and put into service this fall, which will really help us to achieve our ultimate goal. Just a quick reminder, we've been making progress really for the last decade on controlling outfalls. We had an initial goal in December of 2000 to have the first 13 outfalls controlled in the Columbia Slough, and we met that goal. And the Columbia Slough, by the way, from a water quality standpoint, has been dramatically cleaner. It only took us removing the CSO outfalls, getting them under control. No small feat, by the way. It took years of construction to do that. But the water quality sampling ever since then has shown a dramatic improvement. Then in December of 2001, we had 7 Willamette River outfalls, then 16 more by December of 2006. We've done all these, met all these interim targets. The final outfalls are to be controlled by this December. And part of this effort has involved what we call cornerstone projects. Yes, there's been a lot of big pipe construction. There have been small pipe construction. There's been all sorts of work around the city. There's also been a variety of activities that we lump under this title of cornerstone projects, and you'll hear a little bit about one of them in just a moment. That's the downspout disconnection program. We've also put thousands of infiltration sumps in on the east side of the city. This captures street runoff, allows it to percolate back into the ground as it naturally wants to do, keeping it out of the sewer system. We've built hundreds of stormwater facilities. We've separated some neighborhoods and created separate storm water collection systems. Again, the objective is to get that stormwater out of the sewer system. We've actually put Tanner Creek into a separate pipe to let it flow cleanly into the Willamette River. All these activities combined have controlled about 2 billion gallons annually, so a third of the problem has been solved by these cornerstone projects. So I'm going to ask Amber to talk to you a little bit about the downspout disconnection program. We really want to highlight the fact that it has been a big success for us. Amber?
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Amber Clayton, and I am the current and I will be the last manager of the downspout disconnection program. So the early history, the downspout disconnection program started in 1993 as one of our early cornerstone projects. We've been going for a very long time now. We limited it to east side properties on the east side of the Willamette River in the combined sewer area because we knew that those areas were safe to disconnect. We did 2 years of pilot testing with the Bureau of Development Services to make sure that we knew appropriate safety standards so that we weren't causing any damage or harm to property owners' properties or their neighbors. And then in 1995, we officially launched the program in front of City Council and took off and pretty much haven't looked back ever since. And you can see that our targeted areas that we've approached have had deadlines in that very much connected to the control of the CSO outfalls. So, for example, our St. John's program area was tied very much into those early Willamette outfalls. Same thing with Columbia Slough. And right now we're wrapping up work in our Willamette draining neighborhoods. We had a targeted goal of 1,127 acres of rooftops to manage. And so far we've managed 1,130 acres of rooftop. Big part of the program's success has been its community engagement. We were one of the first city programs to ever go door-to-door to property owners to try to engage them, not only to educate them about combined sewer overflows, but we wanted to engage people in the solution, not just let them know that there was a problem. There was multiple ways that people could participate. They could do the work themselves and earn $53 per downspout that met our safety standards. They could be part of a community group. We had hundreds of church groups, school groups, and other groups that would earn money for their group or cause by disconnecting downspouts through our program. And then we also worked with local contractors to disconnect more complicated downspouts, rehang gutters. So there was multiple ways that people could get involved. And we've created many opportunities for students and youth groups to help be part of the solution. The work is safe and cost effective. We've spent over 18 years, we've spent just about $13 million. All of our disconnections are safe. They've been inspected and approved by our field staff. And on average, the average costs are about 2 pennies per gallon of stormwater managed. That's pretty darn cost effective. And as you can see, it's pretty easy to do.
Wait a second.
Did he have a permit for that?
At least you didn't say this picture proves that anyone could do that.
So where we're at is...
That was the official last downspout disconnected yesterday.
Yes, actually, and I brought the official commemorative golden hacksaw that we used yesterday.
Which isn't really gold.
No, but it is made in the USA. So we've disconnected over 56,000 downspouts at over 26,000 properties. So 1.2 billion gallons of stormwater per year removed from the combined sewer system. So, I don't even know how to begin counting the one-on-one interactions we've had with property owners. You know, even property owners where we couldn't do any work, we've been able to talk to them about why that wouldn't be safe. We've been able to talk to them about combined sewer overflows and what else might be going on in their neighborhood and the values of other bureau and city programs that are trying to be part of the solution. So where do we go from here? Well, now that we've got them all disconnected, we need to keep them disconnected. We need to make sure that they stay disconnected because we've sized those pipes now based on them being disconnected. So we're going to be doing a maintenance and reliability phase. We'll be doing spot checks, maintenance reminders, working with folks to fix and repair problems that might crop up over the years. And from here on out, you know, we will probably still be doing downspout disconnection in some way as part of, you know, targeted work to manage stormwater on private property, but the downspout disconnection itself is being retired this fiscal year.
I'm just going to say a quick word before I turn it over to Paul about green infrastructure. Amber mentioned that there's more work to be done with downspout disconnection as far as maintaining them, making sure they work properly. There's more work the Bureau is going to be doing over the next few years, probably for decades, on green infrastructure. This is the other thing we have to do as the city continues to grow and change. We need to manage stormwater as close to the source as possible, and we think the best way to do that is, in the future, continue to emphasize eco-roofs, swales, planters, green streets, and other...
By the way, Dean, on that point, I was watching a basketball game last night and channel surfing, and I think it was CNN or something, had a newsmaker show, and then I recognized the person they were interviewing, and it was you.
Oh, my goodness.
And you were talking about eco-roofs.
Thank you. And you didn't, it was so riveting, you didn't go back to the basketball game.
I watched for a few minutes.
Oh, thank you. Not only are there environmental benefits to green infrastructure, there's obviously economic benefits to the community. This investment is recycled back through creation of green jobs. We all talk about green jobs. We've actually estimated just in this year we're talking about 200 jobs of people working directly in the green infrastructure business. So now it's time to update you on the Eastside CSO Tunnel Project and the associated projects with that.
So I'm Paul Gribben, Environmental Services CSO Tunnel Chief Engineer. You've seen this photo or this oversight several times before. This is probably one of the last times you're going to see it. That big, long red line is in. It's not getting any longer. It's not going to get any shorter. It is done. It's no longer suitable for human habitation. So if you didn't get a chance to see it, I can always show you pictures. But it's being covered up right now. There's a lot of work left to do to get it ready to be put into operation in August, though. This is where we stand financially. The contractor was a German-American joint venture, Kiewit Bilfinger Berger. Our base contract amount when we came to council back in 2006 was $426 million. And that was the cost we felt at the time to do it correctly the first time. We carried a risk contingency in case things went wrong of $38 million, so our total budget was $464. Based on the work of KBB, and also we got a little bit lucky with inflation not being what we thought it was going to be, we estimate we're going to be done at about $390 million. Employment, as Dean mentioned.
On time and below budget.
Well below budget. Well below. Right now, we've had today about over 200 first-tier subcontractors. Overwhelming majority of them were local. total subcontracts were over 400. And as Commissioner Salzman mentioned, our MWSB procurement on this job was far exceeded what we had expected. Today, it's just under $31 million, where our original goal was $26 million.
So could you explain what first tier means and also what MWSB means?
Sure. Those are the subcontractors that have a direct relationship with the prime. So those subs may also have their own subs. So the one that has a direct contract relationship with the prime is called the first tier, but they can be second tier and then third tier also.
And also explain what MWESB is.
Oh, Minority Women and Emerging Small Businesses.
Do you have the breakout and the distribution by each of those categories?
Yes, we do.
I'd love to see that.
We'll provide it to your office as soon as we get back. And right now, we still have about 100 craft workers currently employed in a tunnel project. We had, I think, at the peak, about 450. Safety has also been a major concern. Our incident rate is about 3.0. The statewide average for large construction is 5.4. But Kiewit Bilfinger Berger is a very strong safety program. They're currently the only contractor in what the state calls the voluntary protection status, which is the highest safety recognition award by Oregon OSHA. And what it means is they go through an inspection, they go through a test, and it's that OSHA has determined that their safety program is stringent enough that they don't need continual oversight by OSHA. So it's a very prestigious recognition. Other main piece of this was the Portsmouth Force Main. What you see here is a picture of the what we call a hole through. This was a really good moment because we were having trouble with this one. This was more trouble than the East Side Tunnel was. So that was a really happy day when we saw that machine break through. But that's going to carry the CSO flows from both West and East Side Tunnels from the Swan Island Pump Station to our existing Portsmouth tunnel that goes to the sewage treatment plant. Segment one was Swan Island. That's going to be complete here pretty soon, about another 2 weeks, and that should be done. That was an open cut across Swan Island. And then segment two, the one I was just talking about, was under Wad Bluff and underneath Willamette Boulevard all the way to the railroad corridor. So that tunneling is done, and right now they're installing a pipe inside of it. So we seem to have caught up, and they're a little bit ahead of their makeup schedule. So that we hope will be done by mid-September. Right now the projected date is September 30th. But that's not all we've got to do. This is more information you can absorb, which was the point. This is all the things we have to do before December of 2011. We have a lot of smaller projects, instrumentation and control facilities that we have to install to make sure the system works the way it's supposed to by December 1st. So we have a very focused effort on making sure we get all the level monitoring and everything else we need to make sure this works. This morning on the regular agenda, council item number 554 is a sublease agreement we have with TriMet. Right now on our staging area on the east side, which is between OMSI and the Opera, we are sharing that site with Portland Streetcar and with TriMet Light Rail, their bridge project. And so as we move out of part of that property, we are subleasing that to TriMet. And as part of that, they've arranged for some alternate parking for contractor employees, staff. And what this does is allows all three contracts to continue forward on the same site at the same time. And with that, that's my report. The East Side Review Committee, I think Bill is here.
I saw him earlier.
Oh, there he is. Okay, so now, unless there are any questions at this point, I'm going to let Bill Martinak, chair of the East Side CSO Citizens Review Committee, give his report.
Why don't you turn off the slide there, the PowerPoint?
I will. No.
You want us to just go? And we'll be right here if you have any questions.
Okay.
Thank you for your report, and I have to recognize the students who are sitting in the back and being quiet as mice and not fidgeting at all. So thank you very much for being in City Council chambers this morning.
What school are you?
Columbia Christian.
Columbia Christian? Okay. Welcome. Yes, we know. Welcome. Bill.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Bill Martinak. I'm currently the chairman of the Citizens Review Committee for the East Side CSO project, which has been discussed I'm here, I think, for the third or fourth time. And just to start, there, I do have some good news. I understand it's going to be sunny and 82 tomorrow. The bad news is that's going to take place in Phoenix, Arizona, but other than that, it should be a good day. Anyway, just a brief background. The Citizens Review Committee was appointed at the onset of the project. We started out with about 16 members, and we have faithful 7 members still in attendance at our meetings. So it's been a very interesting 5-plus years there. I, on the committee, I represent the National Utility Contractors Association, and a wide group of members of that organization have participated in the Eastside CSO project as first tier and lower tier subcontractors to KBB. So we have had great participation. That was one of the issues to begin with, was that the local contracting community would be represented and be a part of the project. And it's a big project that basically none of our members were capable of handling, but the city of Portland in contracting with KBB has had an extremely successful project. We have been meeting on a regular basis, about quarterly now. We meet about 4 times a year. Our last meeting was on May 5th, where we reviewed the what was the 60th monthly report. And I'm just not sure that all of you get copies of this, but this is basically the report that KBB prepares every month to track the project. We review a long list of items. Basically, we go over a project summary, safety, quality, progress of work, all the way down through photos of the project. So our committee has been very informed by Paul Gribben of BES and the contractor. So at our last meeting, we reviewed a project update, which told us that the project was ahead of schedule and under budget. We went through a presentation by the contractor to tell us just how they came about, the savings that have been gained over the process of the project. So it's KBB has done an awesome job of constructing the project. We will have one more review. We will be reviewing the final financial audit of the project. We've reviewed the interim audit. I believe that was about 2 years ago, and now we will be reviewing the final financial audit, which basically an outside independent firm will come in and look through a chosen selection of the financial records for the project, just to make sure that everything was done according to the contract. So we'll be reviewing that later. Again, the project, really, the city of Portland should be extremely proud of a project that should be a model for other communities on how to do things right. From all of the input from the city, from the Bureau of Environmental Services, to the work that the contractor did, it's been an extremely well-run project. In my normal day job, I own a construction company. We were fortunate to participate in a portion. We did work on the Tanner Creek diversion, so we were able to at least help a little bit in the project. And so I think that I understand pretty well how construction projects can work, and I've been doing it for a long time, and this is a model project, in my opinion, of how things can be done right. A project that was extremely good for the environment, and a project that was extremely good for the local economy to put local people to work, building a project that will benefit the citizens of Portland for a number of years. So again, the committee has had the opportunity to observe the project as it's being built. We've been able to participate in several of the tours of the project. We did get to spend time down in the tunnel, and so our committee, we know what it looks like, the finished project, and so we're looking forward to the completion and implementation of how the project's going to work. So anyway, speaking for all of the members of the committee, we appreciate the opportunity that we've been given to serve on the committee, to oversee and at least be some small part of getting input from people that are outside of the construction community. A lot of really good questions have come out of our meetings, and KBB has been a very good partner and a very good group of people to keep everyone informed of how they are progressing with the project. So
thank you
again.
Well, thank you, Bill, and thank you for your service as chair of this committee. And as I recall, didn't your company receive also an Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneur Award?
I'm not sure what it is that we receive, but
I think you might have received.
Definitely, we have been involved in several of the BES projects throughout the city.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions for Bill?
Thank you.
Okay, any questions for BES? Okay, do we have anybody signed up who wishes to testify, or anybody in the room that wishes to testify? Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, I have Mike Houck.
Mike Houck, Urban Green Spaces Institute. I didn't plan on saying anything this morning. I did sit on all the original committees that looked at the CSO project however many years ago it was, and I just think it bears repeating. You mentioned you saw Dean on CNN or whatever it was. I don't know if you're aware of it, but he was selected. There were 25 people selected to go back to Washington, D.C. to advise the Forest Service on how they could better spend their money on urban areas. And the reason Dean was there was because of his leadership and, of course, the work of the Bureau on the whole green infrastructure approach. Now, obviously, the CSO is the gray part. We need both. And I just think it bears repeating that we should be very proud of the role that the Bureau of Environmental Services has played, not only here, but in providing a model on the green infrastructure side around the country, and that people are taking notice.
Thank you.
Mike, actually, I was having dinner the other night with Chair Jeff Kogan, and this guy one table over kept kind of leaning over to sort of eavesdrop, and I finally went over, and it was Dean Marriott. I seem to be just –
he's everywhere.
He's stalking me.
Acting as your
TV,
waiter?
It was like, he's everywhere.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Please call the roll, Sue.
Fritz.
Well, it's interesting about the channel surfing. When I was on the Planning Commission in the late 1990s, one of my neighbors, who was my son's basketball coach, said that he had seen me on the Planning Commission. What is impervious surface? And when I was running in 2006, my son admonished me, my older son said, "Mom, don't talk about stormwater management. Nobody cares." Which at the time was probably good advice, but now, lo and behold, here everybody cares about stormwater management, and we are becoming recognized worldwide as leaders in green infrastructure and recognizing it as an important part of our economy. So thank you to Dean Marriott and to Amber, who's been involved for a long time, and Tom Lipson and many others in environmental services who have taken what is a pipe project and made us all aware of the importance of it. And again, thank you to the taxpayers of Portland or the ratepayers of Portland who are funding this. And this is why it is a successful project on time, under budget, and it works. Aye.
Fish.
Dean and the team, thanks for a great report and update. And it's really actually a model of the way that you engage the council on a regular basis on work of this kind. And thank you. And Dan, as always, thanks for your steady leadership in this project. Aye.
Salzman.
Well, I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to be at the helm as this largest public works project in Portland's history comes to a close at the end of this year. And as we've seen today, this is not only hard pipe construction and big pipe construction, but it's also very much an investment in green infrastructure and engaging our citizenry in a simple thing like disconnecting their downspouts so that all the water that comes off their roof is not going into our sewer system and having to be treated and pumped and all that sort of stuff. So I think the statistic bears repeating that we have, through our downspout disconnect program, have removed 1.2 billion gallons a year of water, clean water, rainwater, that would otherwise go into our sewer system and cause us to produce larger pipes and larger infrastructure to handle all that. So, and I want to thank everybody at the Bureau of Environmental Services who's here in the audience today. Barbara George is here. She's the original manager of our downspout disconnect program. But all the Bureau of Environmental Service people who have worked and continue to work long and hard on bringing this project home and then continuing the message about how we need to be diligent about pursuing green infrastructure in order to keep our investment in those pipes a sound investment. And Bill Martinek, thank you for providing citizen oversight every step of the way. So good job to everybody. Aye. Okay, our you could read item 543, please. Oh, 542, yeah.
542. Extend the date of the privileges for regular disabled person parking permits.
This is a second reading.
Second reading.
So vote only.
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Falsman.
Aye. Okay, it passes. 543.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with TriMet Wetland Mitigation at Westmoreland Park.
This is a second reading. Vote only.
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Falsman.
Aye. Item 544.
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to execute a sublease agreement and permit of entry with TriMet for property leased from the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, including an indemnification from city to TriMet.
As was just explained by Paul Gribben, our chief engineer, this is a sublease agreement with TriMet for property that we're leasing right now on the east side. Is there anybody who wishes to testify on this? Okay. Then let's call the roll, please. I'm sorry. It's a first
it's reading. So it goes to a second reading?
I'm sorry. Yes, second reading. Okay. If there's no further business, this council is adjourned until next Wednesday.
Mr. President, thank you for a very economical meeting.
10:15, 10:20. How's that?
It's a record.
Yeah.
Peace.
Thanks.